Baker's late summer order that about 42,000 Massachusetts state workers be fully vaccinated against COVID-19 by October 17 came with warnings that there could be serious consequences for those who refuse to comply.
Many mayors have served, left office, and then returned for further terms, but not too many have come back 4 decades after being first elected. And Charlie Ryan, who died this week at the age of 94, is the only Springfield mayor to have served in 2 different centuries.
How easy is it being a sports fan? Just when you think your team may go all the way, they stumble a bit, just like the Boston Red Sox did this week in the ALCS Game 5. Now they are 2 wins away from another trip to the World Series. We discuss this and more news in our Friday Week in Review on And Another Thing. I'm Dara Kennedy.
And I'm Maya Schwader. Also ahead, some residents of East Hampton may be in for a mind-bending weekend. The city council just voted to decriminalize psychedelics, the 4th city in the Commonwealth to do so. We'll dive into that with our panel. Let's meet our guests for today. With us are Pastor Bruce Shaw of New Hope Pentecostal Church in Springfield. Welcome. Natalia Munoz is the news director of Holyoke Media and the host of Vaya Con Munoz on WHMP. Always a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me.
We also have the contributing editor for FranklinCountyNow.com, Chris Collins. Welcome to the And Another Thing Week in Review.
Great to be here. Thank you.
We begin with the statewide mandate and deadline that Governor Baker set for state workers back in August. His executive order gave those not exempt 2 months to become fully vaccinated with an October 17th deadline report. Governor Baker has warned of serious consequences, including possible suspensions or even terminations from their job for any state employee who did not comply. He viewed it as encouraging that about 95% of Massachusetts state employees had met the deadline and appeared to be in no hurry to punish anyone who has not.
Some of these folks may not have had access to some of the information that we've been sending out. Some folks may have been on leave. Some folks may have been living someplace else because of the issues associated with the pandemic. So
95% is a very high number. Do you think that is why the governor has yet, I mean, it's only been 5 days, but why he has not yet terminated anyone or there's been no consequences to the other 5%?
I get the sense that this was more of a carrot and a stick kind of a thing. I'm not entirely sure how serious the governor was about this. I think it's a bad idea on a number of levels. Certainly, you know, we've seen in other industries outside of government problems getting and retaining employees. And now you're in a situation where you're mandating that these people get vaccinated under threat of losing their jobs. It's crazy. But I also think that this is one of those situations where, you know, Baker's been very, very careful to protect public safety in this whole thing. And while I admire that part, I think that tactically, this probably wasn't the smartest thing.
Natalia.
Well, I think that it was astute of Governor Baker to threaten consequences, people losing their jobs. But it was also quite ridiculous, given that it's really hard to fill a lot of positions right now. So had he fired anybody, then who do you find to fill those positions? And those positions include teachers. You have to be accredited to be a teacher. And they're unions. You just can't fire somebody. I think he just used that as Chris said, carrot and stick, as a great motivator. And whatever motivated people to get their vaccination, good for Baker and good for them to get vaccinated, because that's going to keep a lot of people alive.
And Pastor Shaw, you're a man of the community. When they talk about religious exemptions, have you heard a lot of people have that concern or want to have that religious exemption from the vaccination?
I have not heard from a statewide level a whole lot of individuals. There are pockets that are asking for the religious exemption, but overall, I have not in the areas that I've been dealing with. My guidance is to go get vaccinated, do that, trying to keep everybody safe. And so I understand there is hesitancy. I respect that. I understand that there are some that will want the religious exemption, and we can deal with that on a case-by-case basis. But overall, we need to go ahead and get vaccinated.
As of yesterday, Boston.com reported that around 600 people were currently on suspension. And the State Police Association of Massachusetts President Michael Chevron joined us on And Another Thing this week to say that many members of that union are uncomfortable with the requirement, and he warned that it's going to result in few state troopers being able to protect public safety.
Some of them were eligible for retirement age, just up and retired. We had a bunch that were not eligible for retirement that resigned ahead of the mandate. And we have, I think it's approximately 200 waiting to hear from the department on whether or not they're going to be granted their religious and or medical exemption. So we still could have 200 troopers that are going to be unemployed in a week, 2 weeks, but we just don't know when that's going to be.
So question for the panel. There are these threats of dire consequences. There are still around 5%, we think, of state workers who haven't met this requirement. Do we think that the Baker administration should perhaps let them off the hook when 95% of them are vaccinated? Chris, let's start with you.
My big concern here is the state police, because what you're going to have is, I think you're going to have people that aren't going to want to take it and are going to basically quit or leave the force. I just think that there's two sides to public safety. Should they let them go? I mean, that would be basically admitting that this was all cosmetic and wasn't really a serious attempt to protect public safety as much as it was a political move. So I'm not sure what Baker is going to do, but he's going to have to do something.
Everybody means everybody. And if the state police do not want to get vaccinated, or whoever state employee doesn't want to get vaccinated, okay, then get another job.
Let's move on to the next topic. He was known as the godfather of public libraries, a mentor, a strong mayor, and a champion for Springfield, Massachusetts. Former Mayor Charlie Ryan passed away this week at the age of 94. He was first elected mayor in 1961 and served three terms. Then in 2004, he returned for two more terms before losing out to Dominic Sarno in the 2007 race. Ryan's early years did come during some civil unrest in Springfield, for those that recall. Here is State Representative Bud Williams, who says Ryan was heavily criticized for calling in the National Guard at a peaceful civil rights march in 1965.
I was a young man at the time, but I still can see the guard standing on rooftops as we marched down State Street.
Williams was a city councilor during Ryan's second period in office and says Ryan had become much more racially sensitive and inclusive.
I think he had evolved. I've always known him to be a man of high integrity, incredible person, that championed the city, loved Springfield.
So, panelist and Pastor Shaw, I'll start with you. You've been around this city for a while. How will you remember former Mayor Charlie Ryan?
I will remember him. I dealt with him on several occasions as a man that was very outspoken, but very cordial. First of all, let me just say my condolences go out to his family during this time. I know it must be hard to lose a loved one. And so my condolences go out to the family at this time. But the encounters that I had with him were very cordial. He was a man that wanted to listen. I know what his past was back in the 60s when I was a youngster. However, I see people evolve and change. And there was a more likable person when he was mayor on his second go around.
The fact that he first ran for public office in 1952 and had a presence all the way up until 2007. What does that say, Chris, about the leadership of Charlie Ryan?
Well, what's interesting about him is that, you know, when he got elected mayor, he was the youngest, I think, mayor ever elected. And then I think when he got reelected, he was the oldest mayor ever elected. Let's not forget, you know, I remember when he got elected, I thought, well, who is this guy? I mean, who is this old guy coming in? The city was $30 million in deficit, and he took it from $30 million in deficit to $40 million in surplus in the span of you know, his own tenure, which is an amazing swing. Clearly, the guy was a great fiscal manager, and it does say that he, you know, I agree with the pastor. He did evolve, and it was obvious that there was more there in the second term around, and he was just the right guy at the right time for a city that was in trouble.
This is a man who came to be beloved by many people because he evolved. because he grew to understand. And that is amazing. And that I have respect for that. And that he lost to Dominic Sarno, I don't think it was a rejection of who Charlie Ryan was in the 60s. I just think people wanted a new mayor. That's all. I think he became a great man and a great mayor for everybody.
This is And Another Thing from New England Public Media. You're listening to our Friday Week in Review. I'm Maya Schwader.
And I'm Derek Kennedy. Our guest panelists again today are contributing editor of FranklinCountyNow.com, Chris Collins, Pastor Bruce Shaw of New Hope Pentecostal Church in Springfield, Massachusetts, and Holyoke Media News Director Natalia Munoz. When we return, rethinking a longstanding academic tradition. Stay with us.
Welcome back to our Week in Review on And Another Thing with Derek Kennedy. I'm Maya Schwader. We now move on to a big change happening in how admissions decisions are made at Amherst College. Around 11% of students at the school, well known for its substantial endowment, are legacy students. This means that they had to meet all the requirements for admission, but also received a slight preference as children of Amherst alumni. Now, this is a common practice at most schools that's thought to help with fundraising. Here's what Amherst President Biddy Martin says about ending that practice.
Of course, there are going to be people who are disappointed, and there are going to be some people who think that it means we don't care about our alumni in the same way. Nothing could be further from the truth.
Chris, let's start with you. Amherst is clearly committing itself to trying to promote diversity in its admissions. There are a few other schools around without any legacy preferences. Do you think President Martin is right about that there are other ways to stay committed to alumni and ultimately still be able to raise money from them?
I think so. I think as a child of middle-income parents, one of whom was a teacher, I think anything that a college like that does to increase the access for not only a diverse student population, but also one of modest income is a good thing. I think as long as the college meets its obligations and continues its mission, you're going to have no problem getting donations from moneyed graduates. I think that this is a risk worth taking. I think it's a good thing for, considering the price of the cost of going to a school like that, anything that can be done to make it easier for people to access that education is a positive thing. So I don't think Amherst is going to come away hurting after this.
Pastor Shaw, what do you think it says about these diversity efforts that more than half of its first year students this year are now people of color?
And that is great. And I think this was a great move forward. So in fact that it allows greater access for people of color, people of lower income to actually access their college and get a great education. We need to look at that across the spectrum again, because we need to allow those ability to access these type of schools when you don't have the funding and the funds coming from a lower middle class income and don't have all those advantages that others would have financially. So this is a great move, I believe, moving forward.
Natalia, do you think that this is going to set a precedent for other colleges trying to possibly make similar moves and increase the first year demographics that they might have?
I don't know, because as we know, throughout the pandemic, the amount of people going to college went down. So even though I commend Amherst College for opening its doors to more people and offering to pay for tuition, that is great, but it's still expensive to go to college even when your tuition is paid. And so, you know, there are books and there's memberships and fees and all this sort of thing. I think I would feel way better about it if Amherst College and other colleges said, not only are we going to do this, but this is also what we're going to put in place so that people can get jobs when they graduate. Because that has been a big issue for college graduates saddled with huge debt. They can't find jobs.
Psychedelic drugs have remained illegal under federal law, but East Hampton has become the fourth Massachusetts community to decriminalize them. As a practical matter, that means only that pursuing anyone for possessing or growing these substances like mushrooms and such becomes a low priority for police in East Hampton. Here's East Hampton City Councilor Owen Zarrett.
What I seem to be happening, and that East Hampton's really lucky, I think, to be on the cutting edge of, is that this whole topic, I mean, this is the start of a movement.
The other Massachusetts communities that have done this are Northampton, Somerville, and Cambridge. We know marijuana is now legal in many states across the country, including Massachusetts. Could the city of East Hampton be out front on this movement away from nervousness about psychedelics? Let's start with you. Chris, your hand is up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say that it's important to make the distinction that decriminalization is not legalization. Okay, legalization of marijuana was done by the voters, and it made it legal for use of marijuana and possession of marijuana up to a certain amount.
Okay.
Decriminalization only means that the police aren't going to bust you for it, essentially. So, I mean, I think that this is the first step toward full legalization. I've never done psychedelics, so I can't tell you what is or is not a benefit of them. But I can tell you that there's always been this concern that the marijuana being a gateway drug and that this is another gateway drug. But I think, you know, if there is a medical use for it, it should be legal. And there's no question about that in my mind. So I think that this is one of those situations where East Hampton can be a leader on this. Northampton always seems to be out in front on issues like this, and this is no different. So I think, you know, it's going to take some political courage, I think, of East Hampton's leadership to go along with this. But it's one of those things that time has probably come.
I just don't think that should be a high priority. If you want to take mushrooms, fine. You know, I just don't think the priority here should be let's legalize some more drugs. I think the priority should be on educating people about alcohol and other drugs. I know I sound like Nancy Reagan, and I don't mean to. I'm not saying just say no. I'm just saying that psychedelic drugs, yeah, that should not be a high priority for the police now anyway, because it's not an issue right now. So it's kind of like looking for a problem when there isn't one.
Pastor Shaw, I know it's drugs, but still within the community, if this becomes a thing that goes on throughout the state, people will take them to help their nervousness or just to cope with everyday life.
That is true. However, again, I feel that is a low priority and we have to be careful. We keep moving the bar, keep sliding things further and further. It may not be to the point of criminal, but we've got to be very cautious. And so, again, as things go on, we evolve. But I want to take this slow, look at the science, look at the things that cause us to move that way, and see if, in fact, that is not a high priority. So let's not make it an issue as it's already been stated.
Let's move on to something that can be very exciting and also very frustrating.
Our final topic today, those Red Sox. For sports fans, it's been a roller coaster ride this week. The Sox began with a loss in the American League Championship Series. Their bats came to life in game two. The Sox hit two grand slams on their way to a 9-5 victory on Saturday. And then back at Fenway for game three, they hit another grand slam on their way to a 12-3 victory.
So we know that it's been 7 months of the Boston Red Sox trying to get to the World Series. They drop game five, and this is where the frustration comes in. Here we are, game six is upon Red Sox fans. Some people are even taking the day off of work so that they can channel all of their energy to the Boston Red Sox in the ALCS. I will start with you, Chris. Are Red Sox fans exhausted of the up and down season?
You're talking to a kid who ran home from school to watch 1978 and Bucky Dent. I was on the board during game six of the 86 World Series. I know the pain, believe me, of Red Sox Nation. I understand the frustration. This team can be summed up in three words, Jekyll and Hyde. You never know which team is going to show up from game to game. So yeah, but in a way, there's almost a romantic part of being a Red Sox fan. You know, with the suffering that we have experienced over the years, the highs are a little bit higher, even when the lows are a little bit lower. When they were doing well, it looked like they were going to take out Houston in four games or five games. Everybody was all excited, and now everybody's freaking out. I think it goes seven, and I think you're going to see Houston take it. But I will always forever live and die with the Red Sox, like most New Englanders.
Natalia, they were right there. They seemed unstoppable, as they do, and then they literally dropped the ball in game five. But now here's a chance again. What are your thoughts on what these Red Sox might do tonight in game six?
Well, I want to give Chris a big hug and all the Red Sox Nation members. I just wish there was as much enthusiasm for sports as there is for voting, for participating in our democracy. I know everybody just all of a sudden got bored and it's like left the station. Come back. Good luck to the Red Sox.
You know, that's a very good point, though. Sports is seen as a way to get away from the real world. And that's why so much excitement goes into it. And to think, fans weren't able to really go out and support their teams. Reverend, have you seen a change maybe throughout the community when people have been able to get in person and celebrate things?
Oh, absolutely. We are creatures that love to be together. And so when something like the Red Sox in the series here going on or other avenues that can bring people together, this is a great thing. And so the Red Sox fans are excited about tonight. They're wishing for the best, hoping that it'll go to game seven. This is all good. This is, helps us to get through this pandemic and being stuck into our homes and not being able to get out. So it's always good to be able to socialize and to get with your friends and have a good time.
All right. Amen to that, Pastor.
That does it for this week. A very heartfelt thanks again to our panel. Holyoke News Media Director Natalia Munoz, always great to have you.
Thank you.
Contributing editor of FranklinCountyNow.com, Chris Collins, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Pastor Bruce Shaw of the New Hope Pentecostal Church in Springfield, been great to have you on the program.
Thank you.
We also thank all of you for being with us for And Another Thing this week, and we invite you to join us again next week. Send us your thoughts via email, andanotherthing@nepm.org. And you can catch up on other episodes by visiting the And Another Thing webpage at nepm.org.
You can follow us on social media. Our handle for Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram is @AAT on NEPM. Have a great weekend.